From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Attention, Iggy Pop fans. You'll want to stay tuned. We have a special announcement for you later in the show. Attention, fans of the band REM. You'll want to have something soft to throw at the radio, because after all, you don't want to break the thing. Even if you can't believe what you're hearing about this new online list that ranks all of REM's records from worst to first. All of that's coming up, but first, let's play a game. It's like that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, except way easier. We call it 1 degree of Paul Simon. Comedian, writer, and banjo player Steve Martin and singer-songwriter Edie Brickell are both close to Paul Simon. One's married to him, the other is just a friend. Leave it to you to figure out which is which. Anyway, Steve Martin and Edie Brickell are here in the Soundcheck studio to play some songs from their new collaborative record, Love Has Come For You. And they've brought Steve's frequent collaborators, the Steep Canyon Rangers, back to our studio as well. They all look ready to go, so here is the title track of the record, Love Has Come For You.
Here we go. We're very happy to be here with Edie Brickell and the Steep Canyon Rangers.
She had a child.
That is the title track from the new album by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell called Love Has Come For You. Live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Edie singing, Steve playing, and the Steep Canyon Rangers. Steve, thanks for bringing the boys back into our studio today.
Oh, they're hard to wrangle, but especially when they get to New York City, you know, they've never seen the big city before.
Well, they have.
They're from North Carolina.
They have
we
seen.
We met in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
They have seen the inside of our Green Space studio downstairs,
yes, a
memorable
we had a
great performance.
Time.
That really was a lot of fun. Woody Platt on guitar and vocals, Mike Ugino on mandolin and vocals, Graham Sharp banjo and vocals, Nikki Sanders fiddle and, yes, vocals, Charles Humphrey III bass and more vocals, Mike Ashworth playing percussion there, but keyboards as well. And how did this, first of all, love has come for you. Edie, that's an interesting kind of turn of phrase, you know, that love has done the sort of the picking, you know,
mm-hmm.
sort of a different approach to a kind of classic love song. Was that inspired by a turn of musical phrase as well?
Yeah, the minute I heard Steve's part, I mean, this song just flowed out. The first time that I heard his music, the idea of it did. The very first line, she had a child by that man from the bank, and then I just channeled what the story would be as the images rolled in. And love has come for you. It just felt like this baby is a gift to you. It's not a shame.
Mm-hmm. So it's a story that kind of has roots maybe in, you know, we think of lots of folk songs about, you know, babies that are given away or found or whatever, but there's also a kind of modern kind of sensibility or a timeless kind of quality to these songs.
I imagine it's timeless because people are still having babies,
yeah.
and they find themselves in these kind of quandaries, and you know, and with people having lots of opinions about what happens in your life
mm-hmm.
or your
mm-hmm.
family's life, and love can overcome opinions.
Steve, you and Edie both have done lyrics and music, but it seems like there's more of a division of labor on
Absolutely.
This
record. Absolutely. I was just struck. I'm so glad you asked that question because I too was struck by the phrase love has come for you because it's a double entendre too. It's come for your happiness and it's also come to take you.
Yeah.
I thought it was such an eloquent, elegant phrase. And so many times I was surprised as the lyrics came back, even songs we're doing today, like Siamese Cat. When I saw the title, I thought, now that is an unusual title for a song. And I continue to be struck by the lyrics that she wrote. They're just unusual, and they continue to give as I listen to the record.
So do you have some kind of vague idea in mind as you're playing? I mean,
nothing. No, I write the songs as songs and send them off
mm-hmm.
And see what comes back. And as they kept coming back completely fulfilling, I thought, well, I'm going to push her harder. and that's when we got into some of the more – couple of tunes I would consider kind of jazzy, not really. We don't really leave the area of the banjo, but and she always rose to the occasion.
Yeah. So, speaking of the banjo, this is some of your most kind of lyrical and melodic banjo playing as opposed to the breakdowns and stuff.
Absolutely.
So was that also part of this, was to kind of get out of the...
Yes, I've been searching my whole life, really, for the sound I've had in my head, and I've just been able to land on it really in the last couple of years.
And Edie, Steve says, you know, he would write these tunes and then send them off to you. He's speaking literally, right? You guys are on different coasts, and so he would
mm-hmm.
actually send you what, email files? And
yeah, like love. I found Love Has Come For You. Oh, well, the tune for that early one morning before anybody else was awake. And so I just sat in the kitchen with my dogs, and that's when that song was born, really mm-hmm. early in the morning. And then Asheville, the tune for Asheville was sent one evening when I was cooking. I you know, I went to check my email. Like, anyway, it was dinner time. I needed to cook, but I went to look. And I got this gift of a tune. So I set my computer on the countertop and let it play over and over as I was cooking, and I just started singing to it. And Asheville came out through the course of that dinner.
Mm-hmm. We heard a little bit of that at the top of the segment. So how did this bi-coastal arrangement first happen?
We were actually in New York at the same time, and mm-hmm. we were at a party, and I complimented him on his music and said if he ever wanted to write a song together, I would love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did this horrible thing that people never do. We followed through.
Uh-huh. I was going to say, that can't have been the first time, Steve,
yeah.
someone said, hey,
I mean,
we should write a song
together.
That should
never be done in show business, but we did it, actually.
Speaking of this kind of timeless quality, though, you wrote a couple of songs, a couple of lyrics, Edie, that kind of allude to folk music, American folk tropes, even British kind of, you know, recurring folk tropes. There's King of Boys, there's Sarah Jane and the Iron Mountain Baby. Were you kind of thinking in those terms, maybe getting a step away from bluegrass or the things that you've done with New Bohemians, et cetera, in the past?
No, I wasn't. There wasn't a conscious effort to move away from anything. I was trying to move closer to what the banjo tunes were offering. And Sarah Jane and the Iron Mountain Baby came when I heard myself singing, woo, woo. And I thought, that sounds like a train. I need to find a beautiful name. But I wanted a real train. I didn't want to make up a train. So I Googled Southern train names. And the very first one that appealed to me was the Iron Mountain. And if you look, I clicked on Iron Mountain, and there's this story about the Iron Mountain Baby. Hmm. And so I said, whoa, this woman's name was Sarah Jane. I said, I can't believe that her name rhymes with train. This is it.
I mean, it's one of those songs. It has a very old kind of Americana sound to it, and yet here it is. It's a brand new tune.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad.
That's one of the great things about the record, which is called Love Has Come For You by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell, who are here with the Steep Canyon Rangers. Steve, have these songs changed yet again since you and Edie wrote them with the addition of the Rangers?
Huh? I'm not sure what you mean. We're trying to play them as closely to the record that we can. The record was produced by Peter Asher,
right?
Who's a great, great record producer and
musician himself,
and musician, mm-hmm. a member of Peter and Gordon.
Peter and Gordon,
for
right.
people who are my age and younger, and he really, you know, it was a difficult thing to cap to create this sound because you're dealing with a banjo. And
insert banjo joke
it,
here.
You know, blend with strings and, you know, a very different sound that the banjo, I've always believed, can do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, it's not particularly a new sound because I know it's been done before, but it's not, it hasn't been ever presented wide.
Yeah.
This kind of blend.
So you kind of maybe had this sound in your mind's ear as you guys were
well,
doing
I
the
always
record.
Have, but Peter was able to actually do it.
All right.
And he also presented some new elements to it that I didn't think were going to work so well, but they did.
There were
percussion, for mm-hmm. one thing, which is a no-no in bluegrass. And he took it beyond that and added some, I don't know, it's stuff that's beyond me. I don't know. It's some kind of magic they do. I don't know.
Stuff that plugs in.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. There is some subtle electric and electronic sound
It is very subtle, yeah. actually. But mostly it is an acoustic, I'd say it's 100% acoustic record, mm-hmm. except, of course, for my banjo playing, which is created out of synthetic electronic lips.
Steve Martin, Edie Brickell, and the Steep Canyon Rangers are here with us on Soundcheck today. They will be playing Town Hall here in New York on Tuesday, June 25th. But playing for us today, you want to do another song for us?
Sure. Love to.
All right, this one's called Remember Me This Way. Mm-hmm. And once again, this is, as you listen to the lyrics, another one of those songs that's kind of hard to place in time. But you will find it on the forthcoming record from Steve Martin and Edie Brickell, called Love Has Come For You.
Closing time.
Make me look like I'm somebody. Make me a little younger than I am now. Will you please remember me? Remember me this way. Will you please remember me? I want to be remembered this way. Paint me with a happy family, kids and dogs and babies all around. Paint us on the bank of a river, put horses and a house in the background.
Remember Me This Way is the name of the song. It comes from Steve Martin and Edie Brickell from their collaborative record Love Has Come For You, but that was a live performance here in the studio. Edie, Steve has to take care of some banjo stuff for a moment, so while he's doing that, let me just add, that's a very poignant kind of lyric that you wrote for that song. This was a response to the melody?
Yeah, the music just moved me. Every tune that Steve sent to me had a very big emotional impact on me, and I could just see images and feel emotion and just let it flow.
Mm-hmm. All right, checking some of the questions coming in on Facebook and Twitter. I'm going to hold this one for Steve later because it's sort of addressed to him, but here's a smart alecky one. What does Paul Simon think of his wife and his friend being out on tour together?
Well, we haven't been out on tour, so I don't know yet. But he's excited by this project. He actually really loves the record.
Mm-hmm.
He just heard it about... for the first time, about a month ago when we got the promo copies.
Really?
Yeah.
So he wasn't privy to any of this email correspondence or any of that?
No. He knew what I was doing.
Right.
But he didn't hear anything. He's got his own schedule, which is packed.
I guess.
I would never, tap on his shoulder or even my kids to say, check out what I'm doing, ever. But when we got the copy, he listened and he thought it was beautiful. He thought Steve's playing's gorgeous.
Yeah. So if you're not going to tap on his shoulder or the kids, who do you? Who's your sounding board?
Steve was my sounding board. I'd send it back to him, and I would be thrilled because I'm embarrassed to send it to anybody and say, listen, you do it till you get it right. Well, I do it till I get it right for me, and cross my fingers when I send it back that he'll like it.
All right.
I don't care what Paul thinks as long as he pays for dinner.
I'm going to assume, Steve, that that means you're okay now with the other banjo. And
yes, I'm completely fine. I had to change banjos and I wanted to get it in tune.
That's okay.
All. It's a professional thing that probably you would never understand. Yeah, it's too complicated.
We actually kind of prefer our musicians to be in tune when they play live for us on the radio. So thank you for that. Should we hear another song? This one is Siamese Cat, which, again, appears on the record as well, but we're hearing a live performance with the Steep Canyon Rangers here in the Soundcheck studio from Steve Martin and Edie Brickell.
One, two, three.
I like your Siamese cat. I like your cowboy hat. So spoilt and mean, a regular teenage queen. You gave her everything but time.
Was that at the end of that song?
That was Nikki Sanders, our fiddler, doing a cat purring.
That, I was going to say it sounded like a horse neighing, but okay, cat purr. You're in the animal kingdom.
Well,
I
then
guess
you failed miserably,
enough.
Nikki. It sounded like a horse neigh.
Steve Martin playing banjo, Edie Brickell singing, the Steep Canyon Rangers performing the song Siamese Cat. Steve, you were talking before about being surprised when Edie's lyrics would come back to you. I know the first time I heard that song, I heard that line, "But I don't like your daughter." I was like, "What did she just say?"
Oh, I was so surprised. But I was surprised when the first lyric came back, and he said, "When you get to Asheville, send me an email." And I thought, "Oh, we're off on a contemporary adventure, mm-hmm. and we're not faking old songs."
All right, let me go back to some of the questions coming in on Twitter and Facebook for Steve and Edie. Oh, my God, I just realized.
I know, it's Steve and Edie.
Steve and Edie.
Yes.
Steve Lawrence, Edie Gourmet. Come on, is that why you did this?
No.
Is that why? To be
but
a Latter-day
I love
Steve
and Edie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we're both showing our age. Mm-hmm. Pop vocal duo, Steve Lawrence, Edie Gourmet from the 1970s. Different Steve and Edie, but here's a question from Antonio from Mexico City. And Steve, this is addressed to you. How different is it?
No, I have not received the drugs yet. Oh, I shouldn't say that.
How different is it to write music than to write comedy or prose?
It's identical. No, it's completely two different. Well, let's obviously it's three different things. Mm-hmm. But what are the similarities? I would say in all three of those enterprises, you are writing phrases and sentences that must be concise, and they have beginnings, middles, and ends, and paragraphs. I think that's what I have to say about it. There's a certain rhythm to all of that, especially comedy, and I feel that way in prose too. You can almost feel the rhythm of the sentence. You can feel interior rhythms of the sentence. You can feel the rhythm of the paragraph, and if you're lucky, you can feel the rhythm of the whole book that you're working on. And I think in some way, I feel this way about this record, that whether we intended it to or not, the entire album has a rhythm, an organicness to it that might be just from the way we were working somehow, or the souls involved, I guess.
Yeah. Edie, does that work for you? The idea of the rhythm of the words, the rhythm of the line, and how it builds into paragraphs and stuff, or maybe verses and choruses in this case?
Yeah, I'm always aware of the rhythm and how a certain vowel sound will create a rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the power?
Gee, her answer was so much shorter than mine.
It had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it was concise. It was exactly what you were saying.
Too bad we're live. You could have edited that mine down, but anyway.
Now, the Powerhouse Theater recently announced its coming season, and they're doing a concert reading of a new musical that you guys have co-written called Bright Star.
You know, the Powerhouse Theater does that. They announce things, and then suddenly we have to come up with a musical.
So is there anything you can share with us at this early stage?
Well, we were talking after we wrote this album that we've always wanted to do a musical. I had attempted one just privately, and I didn't like what came out. But suddenly, now I had this little gold mine sitting over here, lyrical gold mine, and we had an idea for a story, and we've been working on it, but it's way too soon. You know, musicals take weeks to develop. They take years. and we're just going to do a little reading of it. We have a great director. I don't even know if I'm allowed to what I'm allowed to talk about or not, just because of contractual things. But we have a great director involved, and we're very excited. We've written another at least 14 songs for that, and we're very high on it. But you know, if you talk about these things, they always just go bad. You know.
All right. Well, will any of these songs? Are any of these songs likely?
Yes, a couple of these songs are involved in the musical.
And Peter Asher's helping us out.
Yes,
too. So it's
as he did today, helping us out behind the control board there in the control room. So thank you, Peter Asher, who produced the record "Love Has Come for You." It's the new one from Steve Martin and Edie Brickell, who, along with the Steep Canyon Rangers, will play Town Hall here in New York on Tuesday, June 25th. They've been playing for us here in the studio on Soundcheck today. And guys, thank you all. It's great to see you all again.
Thank you very much.
It's been a lot of fun.
And where do we get paid? Where does the...
We have interns to take care of it.
Thank you.
One day the preacher come to our door, said, something sure smells good. Papa said, yes, and there's room for one more. Come and help yourself if you would. Get along, get along, get along, preacher. Get along, get along, get along, Papa. Single time we sit down to eat, somebody's in the front yard. Old Miss Mary and Sister Mimi coming over just to play cards.
That's just a bit more from the new record by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. You can check out photos of their session here in the studio at soundcheck.org. Up next, we've got a big announcement about Iggy Pop, and it could involve you. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.
Am I concerned? Should I be so? Well, I don't know. The goddess of beauty is beckoning to me. I got a lesson to learn. Ember's insights in the firelight.
Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When I think Iggy Pop Theme Week, I think things are probably going to get a little out of hand. Shirts will definitely be cast aside. Something or someone will probably get broken or damaged. But we are in the middle of an Iggy Pop Theme Week of sorts here on Soundcheck, and things have been pretty smooth so far. We're streaming Iggy and the Stooges' forthcoming album called Ready to Die on our website, soundcheck.org. And we've been collecting your Iggy Pop stories, and I've got a few more that I'll play for you in a minute. Plus, we're co-presenting a live video webcast, along with NPR Music, of Iggy and the Stooges in concert. They're going to play their new album, plus some old favorites, this Sunday here in New York City. Well, guess what? Things are about to get even nicer, because we'd like to invite you to be at that concert. Yep, you. For free.
Now I wanna be your dog. Now I wanna be your dog. Now I wanna be your dog.
Well, come on. Here's the deal. Right now, at soundcheck.org, there's a special link for you to RSVP to the show, which is happening this Sunday at 5 p.m. at Le Poisson Rouge here in New York. Now, just because your RSVP is accepted doesn't guarantee you admission. It is first come, first served. So you'll want to make sure that you get to the show early in order to actually get in the door. RSVPs will be going fast and space is limited, so go to soundcheck.org now to put your name in.
And now I'm ready to feel your hand. To lose my heart on the burning sand.
Okay, so back to the Iggy Pop stories that have been coming in from our listeners. We heard one from Gail in Michigan about an Iggy Pop memory from long ago.
Early 70s, Michigan Theater, Detroit, Michigan. Iggy singing newer songs that some people in the audience didn't like. And my friend threw a pop bottle from the balcony and it hit Iggy and the show stopped and everybody was kicked out of the theater.
We also heard an Iggy Pop memory from Martha Mook. She's an electric violist and composer based here in New York.
Scorchio, my string quartet, was playing with Iggy in the 2010 Tibet House benefit concert at Carnegie Hall. And that is the infamous night where he did his famous stage dive off the stage of Carnegie Hall and nobody caught him. And he got back up on stage and proceeded to take his microphone and carve out a nice chunk of the stage at Carnegie Hall and then swung it around his head to us and proceeded to hurl it in the direction of the nice Steinway piano, which thankfully missed the piano and everybody on stage, but the security at Carnegie Hall was none too pleased.
Let that be a reminder to you people who come to the show on Sunday. If Iggy jumps, he expects you to catch him. Or at least try to. Martha Mook is the violist in the Scorchio Quartet, which has played with David Bowie, and David Bowie figures in our next Iggy Pop story. Producer Tony Visconti is going to be joining us on Monday night to talk about working with Bowie on his surprise new record from earlier this year. But he's also told us about seeing a somewhat different side of Iggy Pop.
When we were making David Bowie's album Low, Iggy was now, by this time, a long-term friend of David's, and he was invited to hang out with us. And he was there all the time, very calm presence, you know, and I kept looking at him, expecting him to explode into insanity, you know. And I did speak to him. I said, you know, that was crazy. You used to jump off the stage and used to cut yourself with glass. And he goes, I only did those things once. He goes, there were a lot of crazy people imitating me. He goes, only once did I cut myself with glass. Only once did I jump like 16 feet into the audience. He goes, but then there were maniacs who did that night after night. You know? So that was an interesting story. And then I totally forgot that he sang on the album because he was just always there. And one night we dragged him in and he sang kind of on the chorus of What in the World, which is on the A side of the Low LP.
I'm just a little bit afraid of you because love will make you cry, but wait until the crowd goes. Oh, wait until the crowd goes. I'm just a little bit afraid of you.
Thanks to all of you who've called in and shared your Iggy Pop stories. Keep them coming. You can leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Up next, this year marks the 30th anniversary of the debut album by the band R.E.M. We'll talk with a writer who's recently put together a controversial ranking of all of R.E.M.'s albums, in order from best to worst. And that's coming up next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This month marks the 30th anniversary of the debut studio album by the band R.E.M., the record called Murmur. It's been a fan favorite among the group's many studio albums, and some might go so far as to say that it is the band's best album as well as their first. But for one music writer who recently ranked R.E.M.'s studio albums, Murmur only placed sixth. And that was just one ranking that might ruffle the feathers of R.E.M. purists out there. Aaron Brophy of the music site Spinner joins me by phone from Toronto. Aaron, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Happy to be here.
Happy to be on that side of the border. Are you expecting, Americans with knives and pitchforks to come at you?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I am happy to be here, specifically where I am right now.
So this list has Murmur at number six. I mean, I don't want to give it all away right now. It has, another beloved album, Out of Time, way lower on the list even. What was the idea? I mean, you know, do you really not like Murmur? Do you really think it's just not as good as people say it is?
Murmur is a good record, but when you listen to it kind of clinically with a little bit of distance, you know, came out in 1983,
mm-hmm.
And when you compare it to some of the other records and some of the songs on those other records, you go, wow, you know, there's a certain romance to that record, but you want to listen to the other records by R.E.M. instead.
Do you think this record, though, is still important 30 years later?
It's definitely an important record. This was one of those records that was like a foundation record for a whole scene. We'll call it the start of college rock, campus rock, radio rock,
right.
Sort of alternative, the early bits of alternative music. So it's important, but it's maybe a little bit more important than it is awesome.
So it's at number six on Aaron's list of R.E.M.'s studio records. Despite the presence of Radio Free Europe, which was the big hit, or this song, which led off Side, yes, Side 2 back in the LP era, Catapult. Catapult is from the first R.E.M. record called Murmur, now 30 years old, and the occasion for Aaron Brophy's somewhat controversial list of the ranking of all the R.E.M. studio records on the music site Spinner. Aaron's with us on the line from Toronto. And Aaron, did you do this to kind of tweak the collective nose of R.E.M. fans who can, after all, be somewhat, you know, super serious about their favorite band?
I have to admit, there was a certain amount of that. I spent about 15 years working for a music magazine that was very much focused on campus radio alternative type artists. I got to know a lot of people who consider REM one of the greatest, most important bands on earth, and I love them as well. But I also, when I was making the list, was thinking about some of those people that I knew and knew that, oh, this will really make X and Y irritated. And there's a little bit of that in there for sure.
Okay, so there's a little internet trolling going on this list.
Yeah,
but,
a little bit.
But are you an REM fan?
I am, absolutely. I have all the records.
So of the 15 studio albums, you've ranked them all from number 15 to number 1, and perhaps the most controversial choice that you made was the number 1 album, Monster, from 1994. Now, people will perhaps remember the song What's the Frequency, Kenneth? That was the kind of the lead-off hit.
What's the frequency, Kenneth? This young thing's a dream.
After that, I think, you know, a lot of people would be hard-pressed to, you know, be able to name, well, REM fans would, but, you know, the general musical public might be sort of baffled by the rest of this album.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Monster is it's REM's Rodney Dangerfield record. It gets no respect. It's the record that you can find at used CD stores for $2. It came out in 94, which was, you know, right at the height of the alternative era, but mm-hmm. It was also right after REM had made a string of just absolutely huge, super, super massive commercially successful records like Green and Out of Time.
Mm-hmm.
But Monster was buzzing guitars and garage rock and really angry, you know, like just they were rocking in a way that they didn't care, and they clearly didn't want to duplicate what they were doing in the past.
Mm-hmm. So this is REM flipping the bird to a music industry that wanted to hear more of the same, more of the hits, etc.
Basically, and it never got the respect it was due at the time because it wasn't, you know, shiny happy people all over and over again.
But it did have, you know, it did have instead songs like King of Comedy and this one called Crush with Eyeliner from REM's record Monster. Crush with Eyeliner from the album Monster by REM and featuring backing vocals from Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth. We're speaking with Aaron Brophy, deputy editor at Spinner, who compiled the list called REM Studio Albums Ranked from Ass to Awesome, which suggests, Aaron, that despite saying that you are an REM fan, you do think the band has done some pretty awful work.
you know, every band has some bad songs and bad records. You know, Rolling Stones, I'd argue, haven't done anything good since Tattoo You.
Uh-huh.
But
there's a bunch of REM fans who would say that REM hasn't done any really good work, you know, since the departure of Bill Berry.
Some of the records after the departure of Bill Berry aren't the best. There are great moments in most of those records.
Mm-hmm. So you rank, for example, 2011's Collapse Into Now above such beloved records as Out of Time, which is all the way down at number 14. Now, there are only 15 records, so Out of Time, the 1991, this album that cast a towering shadow over 1990s music, is your next-to-worst record by REM.
Listen, Out of Time is kind of like Stairway to Heaven. I don't need to hear anything from it ever again, Led Zeppelin 4. It's one of those things where you know all the words to all the songs of it. I don't need this record anymore. It's imprinted on me.
Well, it included such faves as Radio Song that featured the rapper KRS-One. It had Shiny Happy People, which you alluded to before. And then there was this song, which really unlocked the whole unplugged trend of the 1990s, the song Losing My Religion.
Oh, no.
Losing My Religion was a different side of REM with the mandolins and the violins, and plus you could kind of tell almost every word that Michael Stipe was saying, which is a big change from early REM recordings. Aaron Brophy, though, unimpressed. Number 14 on his ranking of the 15 studio albums by REM. And Aaron, is that just a function of familiarity breeding contempt? Or, you know, if you were stranded on a desert island with one REM record, would you have to reconsider your ranking?
If I was stranded on that island, it would definitely not be Out of Time. That's for sure. It might be Monster, but probably, you know, when it comes down to it, it would either be Document, the record that was always my favorite growing up, or it would be Life's Rich Pageant, which, when I was making this list, I came to realize I like almost every song on that record a lot. So those would be my two to fight it out to take with me onto that desert island.
Uh-huh. So, Life's Rich Pageant, you have it number two, right behind Monster on your list. That's the album that has Superman on it and Fall on Me and a couple of others. What about the worst? At number 15 is Up from 1998. Now, your list in general seems to me to be pretty generous towards recent REM recordings, the post-Bill Berry REM recordings. What's wrong with Up?
Up is the record where they added electronic bits. Now, there was a really awful trend in the 90s when rock bands were doing that. I remember when U2 had their "We're Going to Be an Industrial Band" phase.
Right.
You know, it just didn't make sense to me, and it still doesn't. And you know what? I'm all for adventures and musical experimentation, but Up just wasn't it.
I cried the other night I can't even say why. Fluorescent, flat, caffeine lights, it's furious balancing. I'm the screen, the blinding light. I'm the screen, I work at night. I see the day with the newsprint gray. My night is colored.
That's a little bit of Day Sleeper from the 1998 record Up, one of 15 albums made in the studio by the band REM, and out of those 15, Aaron Brophy ranks it at number 15. So that's the ass end of the list. The awesome end is Monster at number one. The list is called REM Studio Albums Ranked from Ass to Awesome, and it's online at Spinner. You can find a link on our website at soundcheck.org. And just, Aaron, you know, at the end of the day, a list that sort of follows the consensus is boring. A list that makes people kind of rethink and reconsider music they're very familiar with can be a more provocative and more fun thing. Is that really what you're trying to do here?
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of sort of using your record collection. You know, it's not just something to have in the background, but you know, you want to live with it. You want to play around with the songs and the albums and really enjoy, you know, the records that you own and the music that you're listening to. And so these type of lists are one of the ways of doing that, just to extract a little bit more of the favorite songs you're mm-hmm. listening to every day.
All right, well, you can find the full list on our website, soundcheck.org, and the number two album on Aaron's list, Life's Rich Pageant, which, as he told us before, might just be his Desert Island disc from REM. We'll wrap up with the song Superman from that. Aaron Brophy from Spinner, thanks so much for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
I am Superman.
Superman from the 1986 record Life's Rich Pageant, which ranked number two on Aaron Brophy's list of REM's studio albums. So what do you think? Do you agree with Aaron that Monster is not only underrated, but might just be the best REM album ever? Do you think that Out of Time got a raw deal? You can sound off on Aaron's List by calling us at 866-939-1612, tweet us at Soundcheck, or post a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. That's going to do it for the show today. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., listen in as Sam Beam, who records as Iron and Wine, plays a solo set in our studio. You can stream it live 2 p.m. tomorrow at soundcheck.org. Tomorrow night at 9, the British R&B singer and songwriter Jamie Liddell brings all of his electronic gear into the studio for a solo set, and hip-hop journalist Soumya Krishnamurthy joins us to share three new hip-hop tracks from Drake, Pusha T, and Jay-Z, plus the strange world of David Lee Roth. We'll talk with a music journalist who spent a Saturday night with the Van Halen frontman and his collection of swords and lived to tell the tale. Our theme song was composed by New York keyboardist Marco Benevento. It's called Eagle Rock, and it appears on his latest album, Tiger Face. You can find out more about Marco and his music by clicking the link called About Our Theme Song at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.